Rick Norris is one of the original members of the Corvair Society of America and was its first national president in 1971. He's here with us today. Rick, how are you?
I'm fine.
Well, good. Tell us a little bit about those early days with Corsa and what it was that drew you to the Corvair hobby.
Well, I've always liked the Corvairs. I liked them from the very first time I saw one. I was still in high school, and I tried to convince my mother to buy one, and she made the comment that, well, they throw fan belts, and I said my mother wouldn't know a fan belt from a manhole cover. So we ended up with a 60 model four-door Falcon automatic, which I thoroughly trashed and thrashed in my early driving days. But a fellow that lived across the street from me, his dad bought a 61 or 62 Monza four-speed white with red interior. And I always liked the way that car looked. And of course, I rode around with him in it some, so the hook was kind of set at that time. Plus, this fella, his dad would let him do pretty much whatever he wanted to the car, so he was always ordering and bolting something on it. And since he lived right across the street, I was right over there in the middle of it with him. And it was quite a few years, though, I guess, before I got my first Corvair, and that was in 1964. And basically, my father-in-law pretty much gave me, with less than 10,000 miles, a 1964 Monza 110 four-speed.
Nice.
And later on, you know, as I was really interested in the Corvair, and in 1970, I guess it was, I got my first late model, a 65 with a 140 four-speed, two-door coupe. And I was really hot to trot on buying a new one, you know, a 69 model. Of course, that was right about the time that they quit making the Corvair. And I was thinking, well, man, you know, I said, we need to start a club or something like that. And then I saw an advertisement in Car and Driver, which, of course, I've subscribed to since high school and still do. And it was by Richard Langworth, and he was wanting to start a Corvair club. So I sent my little reply in and said, you know, I'm here. I want to join. Well, that really went into me and him exchanging letters, and then we also had some phone calls. But of course, back in those days, a long-distance phone call was kind of expensive. And as things went along, I said, I volunteered to be a technical advisor or whatever they needed, and he asked if I would like to be on the first board of directors, and I said, sure. So from that first board of directors, I was elected the first president, and it was interesting because I thought, well, okay, I'll volunteer for this. Nobody knows me, and there's no way I'm ever going to become the president. And then I got a phone call from him saying, hey, you know, you were elected. Well, I didn't really know what to do with it back then, that and probably still a quarter would get you a cup of coffee. But I was proud of it, and I stayed on sort of as the technical advisor for the newsletter. And back in the early days, we used to do the newsletter, of course, on a voluntary basis. And one year it came around to us, and my good friend Alan Ladrere and I was doing the newsletter. I don't remember exactly what the year was, but that was whenever I changed the name to the Windmill. It didn't have an official name at the time, and I don't know, that popped in my head. And each of the issues, I changed the cover and masthead on it, just experimenting at my drawing board when I had time to do that sort of thing. And, of course, later on, it was changed to the communiques officially. Some people didn't particularly like the Windmill name. But when we used to do that, I can remember we were folding and stapling and addressing the newsletter on my dining room table. I had a couple of volunteers helping. It was like 600 people in the club at that time. But that's the way it was done in the original days. I didn't make it to the first meeting. I did a little phone call thing. As I remember, there was some bad weather, and I didn't want a chance trying to drive up to Pennsylvania where Richard Langworth lived. In fact, I met Richard, the one and only time that I met the man face-to-face was at the 71 convention in Chicago. And ever since that time, I've never seen him again, and I think maybe I communicated with him in the early years a couple of times by letter, but he pretty much, you know, disappeared. He dropped out of the club once he got it started. I think he didn't realize that when he started the club, what a landslide it was going to be, because he was covered up with replies from his ad and people wanting to do this, that, and the other to help the club out. Now, that first convention in Chicago was interesting because we were young and we were pretty militant about the Corvair. You know, if you started talking trash about it, we were ready to fight. And we had a speaker there that was from Nader's Raiders group. I can't remember the fellow's name or anything like that. But, I mean, it was interesting. There was people wanting to lynch him. I mean, it was kind of silly in a way when I think about it now. But we were dead serious about it then. We were Corvair fans. We knew what the car was about. We also knew what Nader was about at that time. There was a lot of passion to it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's interesting you're talking about getting the original newsletters out, stapling and all of that. That's boy, that's a real grassroots thing.
Well, usually it boiled down to somebody that had access, free as it were, to a Xerox machine, a copy machine of some sort. And then we also, I believe, in our case, somebody knew a printer who was sympathetic to our cause, and either he did it on the side for free or if for a very reduced rate for the printing. A lot of it's pretty crude, you know, but that's the way things started out back in the old days.
Yeah, you mentioned you were a technical advisor. You know, you're known for your exceptional work on the car, mechanically, body work. You're also known as a racer, and obviously you made quite a splash with the Donahue Penske Sunoco Tribute Racer. Tell us about what you're working on lately.
What I'm working on lately, well, it's another race car. I didn't intend to do this. Well, to back up, I didn't intend to sell the Sunoco car either, because last fall, after we ran in October, we ran the Savannah HSR Vintage Race at Hutchison Island at the Grand Prize of America Racetrack. I always thought that was an interesting name for a racetrack, but it turned out to be great fun, and I really was looking to come back. The car was running great. In fact, that particular year, I'd cut the fastest lap I'd ever turned at Road Atlanta at the Midi, which is always kind of our first vintage race of the year. The engine was running great. In fact, it's one of the few Corvair engines I've built that actually leaked nothing. People would say, well, did you check the oil? And I said, yes, I've heard that joke. But, you know, the car was running great, and I was planning on what I was going to do this year with it. And when I got back home, I don't know, a couple of days later, I get an email from this fellow who said he discovered the car on the internet, and he went on about, you know, it was he liked the high quality of the build, all this stuff, and he said, would you be willing to sell it? And I said, well, I'll sell anything. It's just a matter of price. And he said, well, what do you want for it? And I had to think about that for a minute, and I thought, well, I said, I'm going to give him my ridiculous, I really don't want to sell it price, and he agreed to it. And I thought, well, what do I do now? So right away, I found out the guy's from England, and I thought, scam. I've never sold anything overseas. So we haggled around here and there and talked. He called me, and we talked. And he was an experienced vintage racer who had run a Mustang for a number of years over there and wanted something different. And he saw my Corvair, and I said, have you ever ridden in one, read anything? Do you know anything at all about Corvairs? And he said, no. I said, well, you have a steep learning curve in front of you, especially starting out with a race car. So I said, well, before we go too much further here, I'll need to see some earnest money. And he wired half the agreed-on price. And, of course, we put it in one account and waited, and then we shifted it to another account and waited just to be sure that this is real money. Well, it was legit. And so he made all the arrangements and had a transport driver met us over at a shopping mall here, and we took the car over, and on a fairly cold December evening, I think it was, we helped the guy load it on his trailer, and that's the last I saw of it until he sent me pictures of him running the car at Brands Hatch. That is a world-famous racetrack.
Sure.
In England. And I thought, man, what an honor.
Wow.
I said, that was pretty neat, but, you know, it's like I said, I didn't intend to sell it. Well, all of my racing buddies kept saying, well, you can't quit now. I was going to use the money to fix up my 67 convertible and maybe work on the dune buggy some. And everyone's saying, you can't quit. We want you back out on track. So I started looking for another race car, but I said, I don't want to build one from the ground up. I want as track-ready car as possible. I found out that was impossible. So I looked at a lot of different cars and talked to some people, and I knew about the car that I purchased. Now, it was in my driveway back in 2002 when Bob Coffin and a friend of his stopped by on the way back to North Carolina with that car. This friend of Bob's had bought the car somewhere out in the Midwest, I think. So at the time, I didn't have a race car. I just was doing my V8 car, and I thought, man, this is neat. I'd like to have one of these someday. And never thought any more about it. And then, of course, through a series of interesting events, David Clemens ended up with that car. He autocrossed it all last year. And then he kept saying, well, you need to buy this car. And I said, well, Dave, I said, why don't you just make me the good buddy, racing friend? We want you back on a track. You can't refuse an offer. And he did. So I said, well, I can't pass it up, you know. And so I ended up buying the car. David put a cage in it for me. He was the one that also put the cage in the original Sunoco car, and he's very experienced at doing that. Of course, David is a very good racer. And I ended up bringing the car back up here, and I tried valiantly to recreate the Sunoco Corvair, which I developed over about 7 years, in a couple of months, and get it to the MIDI to race. Well, that proved to be an impossible task. As I've often said, I'm not 20 years old anymore, and I can't do those 12 and 13, 14-hour days, get a few hours sleep, and get up and do it again. That thing started taking a toll on me and my body. But I did go to the MIDI for the first time in 7 years without a car, though. I had attended the MIDI 6 years in a row with my car. And this year, I was there to support the other drivers, but I just didn't have a car. And it was kind of gut-wrenching at first, when I, especially listening to David Clemens going up out of turn one up the hill and listening to his exhaust note. Now, I want to be out there so badly. But it wasn't to be this year. I don't know if I'll get this car to a point. I hope I will. The goal is to get this car to a point where I can take it to a track like Beaver Run or somewhere like that, and do a little shakedown run and what have you, and maybe make the Hutchison Island race in the fall. But, you know, that's the plan for now. We'll see what happens.
Now, you've had some experience running with NECC. Tell us about that.
I certainly have. I've actually participated in six NECC events. They go from my first one was in 2002, and the last was in 2011. 2002 was a standalone event, and that was with my V8 Corvair. Now, that was the very first time I had ever been on a racetrack in anything, and here I am out there in my mid-engine Crown V8 Corvair. And I was really kind of afraid of the car more than anything else. Bob Coffin rode with me. He did a little instructing, and the thing I remember most about that particular NECC event was it was almost unbearably hot. Even the locals were complaining about how hot it was. In fact, it was hot enough that I think that's the one where I actually blew a head gasket. A car got pretty hot.
Mm.
But it was my introduction on NECC events, and I really enjoyed it. It was great, and of course, being with all the people there, that was just great. And the next one I went was 2003, and that again was another standalone event at Summit Point, and again with my V8 Corvair. I wasn't fast, to say the least. Like I said, that was only the second time I'd ever been on a racetrack, but I had a real good time. And for the money, you know, it was great, especially to go to some of these tracks that you'd only just read about, and I'd never even attended a race there, much less been on track with my own car. The next time I ran with NECC was 2007. That was a track event in conjunction with the 2007 convention in Detroit, Sterling Heights, actually, just outside of Detroit. Of course, that track event was held at Waterford Hills Raceway, and I knew that was a famous little racetrack that had been there for a long time, so it was really neat being out there with the other racers. And, of course, by this time, I had my Sunoco car. Now, I was still developing the car, what have you. And my idea was to just be a track, autocross, and even street legal. It was street legal at that time. I found out that you can't really do that. The car becomes not very good at anything. So, but at this time, I tried to run the track. I actually got some time out on track, but I had a big oil leak. I had a crack in the oil filter adapter that I couldn't fix there. I managed to buy a piece when we got back to the convention and fixed it and made it down to the car show. Also ran the autocross at that event, which was a lot of fun. I don't remember how well I did. I don't pay a whole lot of attention to that. I just go out there to have fun, and of course it's a good place to shake down the car, and you'll find some things wrong with it, some things that you want to change. I actually debuted the Sunoco car as a track car and race car at the 2006 Yanko reunion at Nelson Ledges. I know that was not put on by NECC, but that was neat being there at Nelson Ledges because that was Yanko's. He considered that his home track, and that's where he used to do a lot of testing with the Stingers. So here I am out there with my car, and I had a buddy of mine help me that night. We were flogging on the car trying to get it ready, and I said, if this thing, it was about 10 o'clock at night, and I said, if this thing starts, I'm going. Well, it started, and I thought I had a tachometer, but no other gauges, and when I got to the racetrack, I found out that the tachometer was actually not working either, so I had no gauges, and I said, it's going to go or blow. Well, it didn't blow. It went. It was a fairly mild engine at that time, though. But then when the next time I did an NECC event was in 2008, and that's when they started up the Olympics, or as I call it, the Oil Olympics. And that was, of course, at the Putnam Park track, which is an absolutely beautiful, looks like a Kentucky racehorse farm other than a racetrack. But NECC put on the event there. And of course, you know, it was a three-event deal. It was the track event, autocross, and drag race. So I ran out there at Putnam Park and really had a good time again. Of course, NECC does a real good job of organizing these things and also of conducting them. You get a lot of track time, and you're pretty much there with all your buds and some of the real race car guys. In 2009, I did the Beeve Run event. I think this was the second Beeve Run event that NECC put on, because the first one, they always talked about all the rain, and it didn't rain at this one. David Clemens co-drove my car and really had a good time at that event. I liked Beeve Run because that is the first place I took any real driving instruction before I started actually road racing. It's now, of course, changed hands, and it's called Pit Race. And they hold the Pittsburgh Vintage Grand Prix there, which me and several of the other guys have run a couple of times. Of course, I tried it last year, and that's when the camshaft, or not the camshaft, but the cam gear spun on me and bent up all my valves, and I had some serious engine work to do. Oof. But that was a really good little race there. Actually, when I the next time we went, let's see, that was again in 2009. It was the Roebling Road track event in Rosedale, Georgia. Now, Roebling is another of those famous little racetracks that a lot of the big name guys went to. But what was really significant about that particular NECC event was that I had finished a 2-day SECA driver school there. Back earlier in that year, and here we are again. So I was kind of anxious to see what my car would do and how, if I could improve on any of my race school times. But the way this event was truly special is I met James Reeve. Of course, James Reeve is the legendary Corvair driver from Atlanta that ran back in the day. I had only read things about him. I lived vicariously through reading of his exploits back in the day. And here I got to meet the guy. Well, when we're there at the race, it was lunchtime, and I was sitting in my under my shelter there by myself, and Mike Levine come over. And see, James was at that event because Mike Levine had convinced him to co-drive his V8 Corvair there for this track event. Well, this is all a master plan by Mike Levine to get James Reeve back into the racing fold. I'm sitting there talking to Mike, and Mike just kind of offhand said, you know, he says, we need to get James in a Corvair-powered Corvair. I said, yeah, I said, that'd probably be a good idea. We sat there a little bit, and he left. I'm thinking, you know, I said, he just asked me if I'd loan my car to him. That's exactly what he was doing. I said, well, of course. So I knew James was in the snack bar. I went over to the snack bar and interrupted his lunch and asked him if he'd like to drive my car. He said, which one is yours? And I said, it's the blue Sunoco car. And he said, well, as soon as I finish, I'll come over and look at it. So I got kind of excited. And he came over, and he got in the car, see if he fit and all that. I'm really getting excited now. So he said, well, he said, I'll go get my suit on and my helmet and come back. Well, I'm going crazy by this time. One of my friends said, I thought I was going to have to tie a rock to you to keep you from flying away. So I was running all around the car, making sure it was all right and everything. James come over, and he got in the car, and I was explaining all the controls to him that he probably already knew. But he said, well, he says, I'll be careful with it. And I said, no, no, no. I said, take it out and drive it like you stole it. So at this time, I had also put some long tube headers on it. And, of course, Roebling Road has a real strict sound rule, and you usually have to run some kind of mufflers or something, because if you break their meter or peg their meter, you know, they'll tell you either got to fix that or you can't run. So I knew I had been running with super traps on the ends of my headers, and I'd passed the sound meter, but the guy told me, he said, you're on the verge. I said, well, as long as it passes, I don't care. So before James went out, I thought, I have got to hear this car with open pipes at full song coming down that straightaway, and with James Reeve at the wheel, I'm taking the super traps off. Well, they went out on track, and of course, Mike being devious, he figured out he could get on track at the same time James was on track, and they were going to do a little racing on the backside. And of course, in an NACC track event, racing each other is a total no-no. Well, not only was that a no-no, as soon as James went down the front straight with those open pipes, it pegged the meter. And I've got an excellent picture. I don't remember. Bob Quincy, I think, took it. It's perfect. As James passes the black flag station, and the guy's waving the black flag at him. Of course, James can't figure out why he's getting the black flag. But number one, it was for sound. And number two, it was for racing each other, which you can't do. But James is an old racer, and that's all he knew. He'd never run a track event before, but I always like to think that I contributed to getting James Reeve back in a Corvair and back on a racetrack.
That's a great story. Wow.
The last time I ran with NECC was 2011. That was, again, an Olympics-type track event, and again, Putnam Park was where the track was, and I ran Putnam. In fact, I improved my times there quite a bit, but I'd had some road racing experience by this time. Didn't run the autocross, but it did try the drag racing at Muncie Raceway, and Muncie is a very famous drag strip. I tried a little drag racing there, but I wasn't willing to do the power shifting and all that sort of thing that some of those guys were doing. I was just curious as to what my car might do in a quarter mile there, and it did pretty well. As I said, all the NECC events that I've run with have been nothing but good. And old Colonel Clink, as I like to call Brian O'Neill, he has passion for it. He has done this for a long time. And he does a good job of keeping everybody in line and knowing your job and doing your job. So it's something that's required for an event like that to make it successful, and always makes the driver's meetings interesting as he goes about telling you this, that, or the other. So that's pretty much my story there as far as NECC goes and the times I've run with them. I know they've got some events planned for this year. I don't know if I'll be able to make any of those or not. It depends on a lot of different things. I'm retired now, for one, so I don't have the disposable income that I did have to play around with my favorite hobby here of messing with Corvairs.
Yeah, you know, NECC now is open to cars beyond Corvairs.
Yes, I know that.
Yeah, so to anybody who's, kind of thought about doing something at speed with their Corvair or with, with another vehicle, what would you say to them?
Oh, I'd tell them to definitely do it. If you learn nothing else, you'll learn more about what your car does under conditions like that. Most people that drive have no earthly idea of what the car is capable of. The cars are always capable of more than what the person is capable of making it do. And it's always a good experience for someone who's never done any of this before to get out there and experience a little bit about vehicle dynamics and what happens to your car when you do this or that or the other, and you find out that you can, with a little practice, you can get around a race course a little faster than you thought. It's really good safety training, and I know from my vintage racing experience now that it makes me a better driver on the road as far as being situationally aware when you're driving. Some people that ride with me now say that I follow people too close. Now I'm looking for a chance to pass them. Just kind of a habit, but I have to tell myself not to do that because the person in the car in front of you might not have the slightest idea what they're doing.
Well, and the person in the passenger seat, they're not aware maybe of what you're capable of and that everything's under control.
That's true. That's very true. Some of my coworkers, when I was still working and I was driving a company vehicle, we were at some remote gas compressor station in Virginia. I can't even remember where it was, but it had a nice curvy road. I mean, it was wide and nicely paved, but it had some nice curves, and I was flinging the company vehicle through there pretty good, and one of the engineers that was with us was just about to open the door and bail on me. He was getting really excited, and I said, I'm not even pushing this car near what the car is capable of, that was kind of entertaining.
Well, Rick, it was great to talk with you, some great stories, and I do appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
You have a good
day. My pleasure.
Yep, bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.